TLS is go for main engine start.
Go at throttle up. Negative return. And we see a nominal Miko. Welcome to space.
Jake, this podcast is a chronicle of our friendship, if nothing else.
Oh, that definitely is true. Yes, yes.
But there's one thing that you don't know about me. Well, okay. There's probably several, but one of them is today is my favorite day of the year. Like across
today,
the board.
Like this date, May 28th?
No. Friday of Memorial Day weekend is a holiday where I'm from, you know?
Yeah.
You get like several hours. If it wasn't absolutely shit weather out and this whole weekend, several hours ago, I would have been in a car on the way to the shore. That's just what you do. You grow up in South Jersey, like you're going to the shore Friday, Memorial Day weekend. It's the summer, like basically a holiday, you know?
Yeah.
School sucks that day. You're just mad about it that you even had to go. So excellent day to have an off nominal episode. I'm really glad that this worked out because it's like
I like that so this holiday, because Canada had it last week, we have our Victoria Day, so this past
you always
was,
do
was
stuff
ours.
Early like just a
yeah,
little
yeah.
bit early,
1 week early, yeah. But it's everywhere you go though, this weekend has like a particular like tradition to it, and every region has like a different tradition. Like I grew up in Alberta and it was always like we called it May Long weekend for short, and you like go camping and you
May Long.
That's like so what are you doing for May Long? Oh, we're going up to Banff to camp. Like that's just what you did. And then I moved to Ontario and it's not called May Long there, it's called May 24 because of the beer. And you go out to your cottage, not a cabin, it's a cottage in Ontario, and you go out there by the lake and you drink beer. So now I learned that you have the shore. That's yours.
Yeah, this is the start of summer, like culturally, if not actually.
Yeah, so. Totally.
But we're heading into, as you and I were discussing, the low attention summer. You know, like everybody is going to be checked out of everything for the next 7 months.
Yeah, nothing's going to happen this summer.
Yeah. So if you did not get something out of somebody that you needed, like check back after Labor Day. I don't know. I assume you do that like early July. Just a couple of weeks early.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you guys start school before us in the fall, so that's that's role reversal there usually.
Mm. Some of us.
Yeah.
Some of us do. What are you drinking? You got drinks? This is an early one. We're doing a matinee here.
Yeah, matinee. We're gonna helping out our European friends, which we like to do from time to time, and also we just thought that most people would probably be doing what you just said, is packing up the car and heading out to the shore. So I thought I'd get it done earlier. I got a weird one today. I don't know if it's going to be any good, but it's bourbon blood orange wheat ale. So I don't even know what this is going to taste like. That's like a lot of flavors that I don't really know how to synthesize in my head. We're going to see what it's like. Bridge Brewing, which is in North Vancouver, which is pretty cool. And you know, this may be the last Vancouver beer I drink on this show. We don't know.
So,
yeah.
We got some news to talk about, I guess.
We do have a little bit of news, yeah. Because this is definitely going to be the last time that you viewers on Off Nominal will see this room. Because I'm moving. I'm leaving Vancouver. It's over. Getting out of here. That's the story.
That's the news.
Yeah.
I have a bottle of wine today, Jake. Focus.
Focusing.
I've got a little Vernaccia di San Gimignano here. A great little white wine for the summertime. Very refreshing. So I'm doing it different today, Jake. Usually you expect a beer, but look, it's summer.
It's always a special off nominal when you don't have a Yards Brewery.
I was close to having a victory summer love, but I did not. Where do we want to start? We've got a list of topics that range in spaciness, I would say.
Okay. All right.
Do you want to start in space or non-space?
I think we should start in space. Yeah, let's stay on brand for what the show is.
Okay. So Long March 5B, do we want to talk about that?
Yeah, this is a fun one.
If you have not been up on the news, there was a Long March 5B launch. They don't deorbit the core stage, which they like to refer to it. Actually, I believe that the I forget which agency in China is in charge of the Long March 5B, but whoever it is, I believe listens to your podcast. Because you often describe SLS that the core stage is actually an upper stage that is ground lit.
Yeah.
And whatever agency of China was saying that the core stage of the Long March 5B was actually an upper stage because it gets into orbit.
Yeah.
So I don't want to blame you, but how do you feel about that being used? Your famous line being used that
well,
way.
Well, I'm delighted that my market penetration behind the Great Firewall is improving. So I'll take that as a win. But it's weird. So it's funny because like this is one of those space stories that like reached outside of the spaceosphere, you know, like where this is one where you're like, your mom is texting you, like, do I have to worry about a rocket falling on my house? And then I'm like, no, mom, you're at 49 degrees. Don't worry about it. But
you had the legitimate excuse to say, yeah. You're too high.
You're never going to be able to actually like have that explanation though. Like there's no way to like explain it to a non-space person. Like, no, there's like either you lie to them or either they're safe and they don't understand why they're safe. Or they're like probably safe, but they don't understand how to process that probability. And they have no way to synthesize like why that is true. So you're just like, just don't worry about it. Like just, yeah.
Both times, this Long March 5B and the previous one, the ground track was over Philly several times within the window on both of them. So I didn't have that luxury to say, no, mom, it's not. My feathers are a little ruffled about this story, mostly because, like, there's no coverage other than Andrew Jones's Twitter feed when boosters are dropping on anyone in China, but the, like, mere chance that a COPV is going to land in your backyard is, like, Lester Holt's talking about it in the nightly news here, you know? So I'm a little annoyed, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's how it goes, I guess.
Proximity bias.
There's not much more to say about that.
Yeah, it's a thing that bums me out. I do think, though, we can come up with some strategies for handling space debris generally.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out if we want to get too deep into this topic, but I was trying to figure out like the issue that everyone always says is like, who's in charge of it, right? Because wherever you launch from, they're technically in charge of it, and there's no real enforcement of leaving debris up, right? A good example, SpaceX's Starlink rods that I had railed against for a long time, of like, what's going on with these deployment rods that you will not show us?
Yeah, and they're still up
recently,
there.
Some of them are deorbiting faster, but there's like at least 8 that are going to be up there for a long time, and I was kind of annoyed about that.
Even some of the new ones, right? Like they started like deploying them lower and then all of a sudden they went back up.
There
again,
was one with the rideshare launch that they deployed a lot higher than that. So there's just these 4 giant rods that are like above the ISS still. And that bugs me, you know? I don't know.
Mr. Holt's not talking about that, is he?
No, he's not talking about the Starlink rods. But I'm trying to figure out a policy where like, do you... Because the issue is who's in charge of it and who pays for debris removal. So I'm trying to figure out if you can set up a system where, and this might have to be country by country, where like you are fined or penalized if you leave debris of a certain size in orbit, and they use the fines to cover the cost of missions to go and clear debris objects.
Isn't that part of the Artemis Accords? Isn't there a space debris thing in that?
Oh, I don't know. I have to look that up.
I wonder if that's sort of the idea. It'd be like a framework that everyone kind of signs onto, and then.
We need some way to get a bunch of money to like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Envisat is the big one, right? That's the huge dead ESA satellite that's like enormous and has always been dead. And.
Oh, I don't know that one.
That's the one that essentially they're working up to that with the debris removal projects that are going on. You know, they're
that's public enemy number one in orbit
there. But yeah, it takes a while to get there. So they're like, let's start with these smaller ones. But I don't know. I think you and I could run this like. Intergovernmental organization to handle space debris.
Oh, okay.
Because it's instantly then an international cooperation.
International collaboration, yeah. You got a quarter of the G8, I think, in there. But
we at least got a good start.
Okay, yeah.
We can get Matt from Interplanetary.
20% of the Artemis group is in there.
JB would probably be in.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, JB.
Friend of the show. There we go. we get it all worked out.
So it's a similar topic about the, like, your mom being worried that it was going to land on her. Was that an actual text? Was she actually worried?
No, my mom was. Actually, my wife was, though. And it was funny because she was just like, okay, well, so it's going to come down somewhere. Do you know where? I'm like, no. And I'm like, well, how much warning are you going to get? I'm like, you'll see it before you get warning. Like, you'll see it coming.
Too late.
And she's going to like, that's normal. That's okay. I'm like, it's not okay.
Is normal, not okay. Long story.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm trying to draw a line between Long March 5B and all of the UFO stories of late. And just like low effort journalism, because people have a very quick reaction to these stories. Yeah. Like, China rocket gonna fall on your house. Oh, gotta click that. And then the
UFO stuff. I was
looking
for a reason to be mad at China, but this is actually really convenient.
Man. Oh, I got a lot of angles to take on that one. You know, Chinese rocket leaks out of the lab. Something like that. UFO stories, though, are sort of the inverse, where it's like, there is no back half of the story. Because it's like, I don't know. Thermal imaging. What do you think? You know, and then it's just kind of an empty story, whereas at least the 5B has some legitimate follow-up that you can actually walk people through. Because there's explanations of the UFO stories out there, if you really want them. Like, and be like, well, even Roswell. Like, we know what that was, and yet it maintains this supremacy in history of, like, the Roswell UFO incident. So I'm just trying to, I guess I'm trying to psychoanalyze the public. And when it comes to like space communication, yeah, on these stories, you haven't been following the UFO stuff.
No, I haven't. And this is an interesting point, because there was a podcast I listened to. God, I'm trying to remember now what one it was. Oh, I think it was actually a 538 podcast. And they had on these people that were talking about conspiracy theories. This is all related to the election fraud stuff that was going on. So they had like these like academics who like studied conspiracy theories and how they spread and stuff. And some of them are like very pervasive, like the idea of like, you know, a deep state or something is like a pretty universal conspiracy theory that can be applied kind of no matter where you go. But some of them, like UFOs, is actually a very regional thing. And it's basically the United States and Brazil. It's like the two places, or maybe it was Argentina. It was some country in South America. It's like the two places where everyone is like UFOs, and everywhere else is just, whoa, like, what are you talking about? They're not real. Like, and they just move on. Like, there's no foothold for it at all. So thinking about that, because you kept saying, like, we should do this UFO. I'm like, I have not been.
You have no opinion. Yeah, it's like irrelevant to your life.
I'm like, well, yeah,
people have been like captured by this story for weeks down here. And I really don't understand, like, what is, I mean, I get why people are interested in it, but like, I feel like when you get really into these stories and you see people that are like legitimately convinced of like these encounters or whatever, they have like detached from the everyday reality of the technology that surrounds them.
Yeah.
You know? It's crazy to me. But I don't know. I just was kind of marveling at these similarities in these storylines. And yet, here we are. We always have these stories in our life.
Yeah, so, we do. Yeah, they're consistent and persistent.
The UFO thing, early UFO stuff, right? 60s, Cold War era stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I forget where I heard this, but apparently the agencies in the U.S. that would really like the UFO story to have proliferated were putting people into these communities to be like the UFO guy.
Mm.
And like say, oh my god, I saw some crazy stuff flying around. So they were literally planting people into these certain communities to generate this hype because it was a useful cover story. And it's like very similar to, we're just now off on a conspiracy theory tangent, I guess. The first book ever published with JFK assassination conspiracies was funded by a KGB project. They funded the book publisher that published that book.
Yikes.
Because they were worried that people would think it was the Soviets that were responsible. Because It's just this crazy thing where, like,
it's propaganda.
It literally was. It was a book publisher funded by the KGB because they were worried about it being pinned on them. So they started this whole thing, and then we ran with it. If there is one thing we're good at in this country, it is running with it. You know, we will keep the Roswell thing alive. I saw some people in the chat wondering about Roswell. It was, I forget the name of the project, but it was high altitude balloons that were monitoring for nuclear testing done by the Soviet Union. And then that is what crashed. And they like said it days later after the Roswell incident. And everyone was like, okay, cool. And then 30 years later, it was like, what if it was an alien?
And 30 years later, you have the X-Files. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy.
Huh. Okay.
Anyway, so that's what's been going on down here, south of 49 degrees north. Huh. What else you got? We got, I got this list here of topics. And one of them that I want to pin you down on is your ridiculous theories of Starship's orbital test flight.
Oh man, I really
want to. Now this is your conspiracy theory.
Yeah. I'm some of it I'm not convinced isn't wrong yet. So like we're going to see. But yeah, no, so we got like some details on the first orbital Starship flight, like what they want to do with it. And so it's like it launches from Boca Chica and then the booster comes back and then goes all the way around and it lands in the water. Starship lands in the water off of the coast of Hawaii, so just north of Kauai. But like that's not a full way around the Earth, right? Because you don't get all the way back to Texas. And so I was kind of wondering, like, you know, is this an orbital flight? And first I got distracted because I was doing the math in my head and I'm like, I don't know how you get up to the latitude of Kauai when you're that far around the world. So like I started wondering what direction it was launching or if there was like a dogleg maneuver or something, but sorted that out. It's fine. It's the right direction. But I still am wondering though, if it's actually like a suborbital flight, because it's a 90-minute flight, but it doesn't make it a full orbit. And so like something's wonky there with the timing. And so I'm kind of like wondering if it's like a really high apogee suborbital flight so they can like get up and get some good velocity coming in to test the heat shield and also stretch that time out so that it fits within that window. That's my like conspiracy theory. Okay, I could be totally wrong. Because they say it would be like 1500, 2000 kilometers maybe.
Okay, so you've did this. That's high. That's really high.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's like that's the thing, right? Because if you and the benefit of that is if your reentry burn fails or something, you still come down at the right spot, right? You know, it's a ballistic trajectory, so you don't have to worry about that. Because the worst thing would be if it failed and then we had another Long March 5B, but okay, it was a Starship, right?
All right. You're convincing me a little on that point. I'm still like, why would they not just go into orbit and then deorbit? Like, that's not...
I'm totally ready to be wrong. Like, okay. but my theory on that, though, is why I do that is because then you don't have to install the vacuum raptors. You can cut all that out of your development path,
but
right?
You just need to get... Well, okay. I guess I see your point. I'm less mad at you than I thought I was about this theory. So I'm realizing more reasoning behind it, but it just still sounds totally wrong.
It could be. I say totally ready to be wrong. But if they really want to put the pedal to the metal and get this thing flying sooner rather than later, from a Silicon Valley minimum viable product approach, cut out all
you're
the vacuum plumbing.
Everything. Yeah.
You fly it basically as it is, plus heat shields, the heat tiles, and then you're good to go. Put it in a suborbital trajectory, and then it comes down, right? And then you just do everything the same. So it's a quicker path to that first flight rather than going through all the plumbing and getting the new RVACs out there and doing all that, blah, blah, blah.
Man, I'm way less. This is a worse segment than I thought it was going to be because I'm much less. After talking with you now, I'm less mad at your reasoning. And at least 50, if not 80% of your reasoning sounds like SpaceX reasoning. Like, well, this, that, and this, we don't need to worry about it. That cut that, you know, the scene from The Martian where they're just throwing seats out of the ascent vehicle, like that model, I'm now less mad about it. And it sounds less crazy. Yeah. I think I was alarmed at how high that is. I don't know why. It's like a fear of heights latent in me, but because it's not like 300, 1,000, not that it's a big difference, but it's like, on the grand scheme of things, not that big of a difference.
Yeah, probably not. Like, I don't know what the entry velocity of that would be if you know, versus coming in from 400 kilometers. I I have done that much math on it, but eventually they want to test it from lunar reentry, right? And so they're gonna have
and then to you think out. About like EFT-1, right? That went to 3,600 kilometers mm-hmm, to, so mm-hmm, that they could yeah. test that in higher entry velocity.
Yeah.
Okay. There's more reasoning in this than my initial listen to your podcast and then get mad in the car kind of thing that I was doing. All right. Well, moving on. We're doing a lightning round, basically, because we've just got cool. a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
The Russians are out of things to do on the ISS, so they've decided to turn it into a theme park for the remainder of the year. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. So I think the Russian space program is in way worse shape than anyone talks about. So I totally get it. I was totally happy to roast them though on Twitter because so they have these. What is it? It's an actress and a director coming up soon
yep.
for one of their flights or whatever. So this woman will be the second Russian woman that they send to the space station ever. Like literally ever.
Ever. Let it sink in, peeps.
20 years of occupation on the International Space Station. Russia has been a partner since day one. It took them until 2014 before they sent their first woman cosmonaut up, and she was the last one. So took some people by surprise, I think, on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're going to double the amount of women they send up there. And it was like, wait, are you
really? A plus tweet where it's really snarky and then very insightful. And then, you know, it's the full cycle there.
So
it is crazy. And it makes all the. Yeah. And it reinforces the fact that in the original space race, it was like, what can we do first next?
Yeah.
A woman.
Yeah.
You know, because they're clearly not committed to it overall.
Yeah. Because once they got the first woman in space out of the way and the first woman spacewalk, because they won both of those races, once they got that done, it was like, see you later. Like,
yeah, makes me think what was going on in 2014. They were like, oh, I guess somebody maybe brought up, we've never flown a Russian woman.
Probably,
like,
yeah.
Ah, it was like crap.
Token, right? So, sucky. Hmm. But, yeah.
Should be fun to talk to if we can, you know, anyone we can reach out to? If anyone knows anyone related to any cosmonauts, hey, just hit us up.
I know you're not busy, so.
All right, so that's the other thing. Then we've got Dear Moon himself going up on the flight after that. So
this is weird to me, and people, I don't know. They were like, it's not weird. Like, he's rich and he wants to go to space, so he's just going to go to space.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, it's like, I guess if you're like if you've got like your lunar tourism or your space tourism checklist, and you're like, I got to get all this done before I die. ISS is on that list, so I kind of get that, but. I don't know. It feels weird.
Definitely like not weird.
Insurance.
It's like definitely insurance. Not weird. It is so not weird. It's like when you are planning really long vacations, like, you know, you want to go to the other side of Earth from wherever you live. You tend to plan those very far in advance because, you know, I'm going to take like a month off so I can fly there and do stuff on that side of Earth while I'm there. And then, you know, and you plan it years in advance. But you're going to go on vacation before then. You're
going
to take a week here or there and do something smaller scale. You know, I'll fly to Europe instead of Australia or something. It's definitely not weird because when you think about the scale, we don't know what Dear Moon's budget was. But these flights to ISS are tens of million.
Yeah, right? I guess
the Taurus flights were much less expensive than the NASA flights.
Maybe this is a good lesson in... We don't know how billionaire brains work.
Or the scale, the magnitude of numbers is like just not
like
connecting.
Jeff Bezos just bought a $500 million boat, and I don't really know how to process that. So like, maybe I should take that as a hint that like I can't follow down this line of reasoning.
You've never bought a boat with several other boats on it.
Yeah, my boats don't have support boats.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. It's so not weird. What I am interested in to see what. It sounded like he's taking somebody with him to help make videos on the station.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what kind of outreach he will be doing. Because I think that would be a good leading indicator on how weird Dear Moon will be. And I think we've talked about that last episode. We talked about how weird Dear Moon could be. And I want to know what kind of stuff he's going to get into on the ISS.
I have a low-key fear that the Dear Moon passengers, once they're finally selected, it's just going to turn out to be like he picked the hottest girls because he couldn't do his contest or whatever.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, my fear is higher than yours on that, I think.
You have a medium key fear on that.
Okay, but what's going on, man? I'm trying to determine here that there's levels of what's going on with selling all these seats to the ISS from Roscosmos perspective. One is, legitimately, we don't have a lot of work for cosmonauts to do because all of our new modules are delayed. Mm-hmm. The other is, we're mad at NASA for not buying seats from us, so we're just going to sell seats to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Which could easily turn into that half of the ISS being crazy and like being a party over there and NASA trying to get work done on the other side, which is a weird thing. Because now we've got so many astronauts going into the US side. We've got like many magnitudes more astronauts per year going up. And the Russians are like, we'll sell all of our vehicle, all of our seats. I don't know. And then the two cosmonauts that are flying on these missions were up there like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So they're clearly flying people that know the way around.
I think they're a little broke, I think, is the big thing. Yeah. They're just like, they're not bringing on new astronauts. And I think, I don't know, it really feels like the Russian space program, especially the ISS, it's just running on momentum. Like they're just doing mm-hmm. it like sunk cost. Like we can't stop the ISS, obviously. And then that's just like the result of it. It's like, that's how much desire there is to participate. And so you're seeing that reflected in the operations on ISS. Cause we've all heard those stories that the American astronauts are busting their butts, like getting work done. And the Russians have 2-hour work days or whatever it is.
Right.
And, you know, play
sounds
cards
great.
Yeah.
Like if I had to pick a side to fly to, man, I want to hang out, you know?
But then, yeah. And then there's all this whole, still this like Cold War mentality, this competition where it's just like, if the US is doing something, Russia has to also be as good at it. And so, well, we're sending our own tourists up there. And we're picking up our flight rate as well. And we're doing a movie in space as well. And we're sending cool billionaires to space as well. Like they're just, you know, it's like little brother syndrome. So it's I don't know. That's my Russian space.
We're going to have a tough time picking titles on this episode. Yeah. So we got Chris G in the chat here. I see difference of that versus SpaceX selling seats. It's the, in addition to thing. It's the, like, there's tons of NASA, ESA, JAXA, Canadian astronauts going to station on their schedule that they already decided. And then every once in a while, it's like, well, we got a port open. You want to come up for a week? And then you're hanging out, which is going to be a weird thing. Cause it's going to be, we saw how busy the ISS was recently. So it's going to be crazy up there. But it's like the complete replacement of regular rotation missions.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Yeah, because they're not ramping up their like cosmonauts on board. Like,
right, they're not flying the amount of cosmonauts they usually would and then adding a couple. I guess technically they are because they're doing like longer stays and they said they only want to have two on at a time.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think they're just mad that we're not buying seats.
I'm sure it's a little bit of it, right? And that's this flirting with China too is like, it's like a little bit like posturing, a little bit threat, a little bit like a little bit of everything.
Like they got
right?
the cash and we need it.
Yeah. You better like us, you better pay attention to us, or we're gonna go play with the bad guys, right? So
I kind of feel like Roscosmos should have just bought a lot of Bitcoin a couple years ago. Seemed like that would have been a better strategy.
Yeah, would have been smart.
Now you know our exit strategy. Do we have other? I don't know. I'm making our way down our list here, and one of these I don't know if it's spacey or not. But you had a dream that you would like to tell us about.
I did have a dream. So okay, it is a space dream, but it's I don't like consider myself like an anxious person, but I do have like panicky dreams every once in a while, and this is like kind of one of those.
Panicky? What kind of panicky? Like you didn't do your homework? Panicky?
Just like I have to make decisions or do work, and I don't know the next step, which is like my biggest
most
stressor.
Jake
right?
ever.
Like we talk about that a lot. Where I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And so like I had one of these dreams, but okay, so SLS, right? Fast forward a few months, it is stacked. We got the thing up on the boosters. Orion's on top, ready to go. They're rolling it out to the pad. And it's like a big deal, right? And you know it's going to be a big deal. This is going to be like, when this happens, Brendan Burns going to be down there reporting live for WMFE.
Standing on the crawler with a lot of wind noise.
In the parking lot where they can just see the crawlway, right? And he's going to be watching it. And this thing's rolling out. And you and I are like watching it. I don't know if we were like remote watching this thing on NASA TV or something. And so you know how the mobile launch tower had that lean to it? That mm-hmm. story came out. There's like a little lean. So it's fine. Like it's just like a little slight lean. It's within margins. Everything's fine. But in my dream, this like little bit of margin had some sort of weird like cascading failure. So like it leans a little bit, which is fine, but it like put a little pressure on the rocket, which put a little more pressure on one of the bolts on the boosters, which like put a little more pressure on the structure underneath it. And then this like big gust of wind comes and the whole thing just falls over in my dream. Like, and it's empty, right? Like at this point, it's not got fuel in it. So it just falls over and like collapses on the crawlway in a big, like anticlimactic, like, put, you know, like, cause there's, it just crumples under its own weight basically. And the panicky dream part of it is that you and I are watching this and I'm just like, what do we do? Like, what does this mean? Right? Because you just watch like 20 years essentially of development just come to a complete, like, you know, and we're like trying to go through all the eventual. I'm like, okay, well, I guess Artemis 1 is off for one. That's going to be happening. And then, and we're like working our way back. And then we're talking about like the congressional hearings and Bill Nelson being hauled up in front of Congress. And then like Boeing just getting lit up about stuff. And then Northrop Grumman. And like, there was so much like, blowback from this whole thing. And then, yeah, it's like, did anyone get hurt? Like there's guys that walk by that thing when they're rolling it out there. And there was just it was like too much space news all at once. Like I just couldn't process it in my dream. And that was it.
How long was this dream? This sounds like it went on forever.
Minutes. No, okay. it was
really quick.
You just like wake up and you're like, oh man, I hope that doesn't happen. So that was my crazy space.
Do you remember a lot of the visuals of the dream? Like was it cinematic or were we sitting in this kind of stream position?
I think it was, yeah, it was like just, we were okay. Just here.
Because the way you were picturing the SLS butterfly effect of like this bolt blew it, like I pictured you getting like a close-up camera angle, like it would be in a movie where like you see one boing, thing go and then like a bolt fly.
No, this is like after the fact we learned this. Okay. In this. Like the actual event would have been just completely stupid. We're just like watching it. It would have been so boring to watch. And then it was just like, plop.
Oh my
god. It just fell over and we're like, wait, what just happened? Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
You need to take some time off.
I really do.
This is the moment when you realize like you gotta stop thinking about this for a couple minutes.
Do you want to hear another funny SLS story?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I sometimes make the joke that like a lot of people have opinions about SLS, right?
Oh,
and wow. I don't know if you know this, but I always kind of make the joke that I'm less bothered by it because I'm not footing the bill. I'm mm-hmm. not an American taxpayer, so it's not on my bill. And so it's just really just like a thing that happens or it doesn't, and it doesn't really affect me. But turns out that is no longer true. So about whatever is it, maybe 6-8 weeks ago, we had the press conference for the Green Run, if you remember that. And I sent the email to NASA and got the press credentials. They sent they send you the phone number and the password. I dialed in. I was not paying attention. And turns out the phone number was not a 1-800 number. It was a DC number or Alabama number or something. And I just called it and sat on the press conference for an hour and a half. And I got my phone bill a couple weeks ago and I had like a $50 long distance note from this stupid press conference.
And you were like, what did I do? Did you immediately know what it was, or did it take some digging to realize that it was the SLS call?
I'm like, what? My phone bill never changes. It's like $50.40 every month, ding, 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 like clockwork. And then it was like, boom, $90. I'm like, wait a minute, this is not, look into it. I'm like, who did I call in this random times or area code for 90 minutes? Like, what was this call? And I was like, oh my God, it was
that is incredible.
Yeah. So, and then I was curious and I went and looked up like the development costs of SLS and divided it by all the Americans and it's about on par. So we're about the same now. You and I have both contributed the same
contributed
amount
as
to,
much.
To SLS. Mine went to AT&T or something, but we both spent it
that
all.
That is amazing. Yeah. Well, eventually they pay taxes. So yeah, it gets there eventually. That's amazing. I would have loved if you called them and like fought that you never made this call and then halfway through realized like, oh my gosh. You had a good question though in that. So it didn't lead to a good answer, but you did have a good question.
No, it never does. I've tried, I've gone on like 4 SLS press conferences and tried to get like John Honeycutt to say something that wasn't like, you know, from the canned press release and failed. But
yeah, everyone thought you were moving to to the US
because
you referenced moving and then that you were going to pay for SLS. Jake loves SLS so much and is worried about the karma that he has inflicted on it with his dream that he has moved to the US.
I
want to
start
taxes.
Contributing to this. I'm not moving to the US. I am I'm going somewhere more fun than that. So
ominous.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Do you want to talk about life stuff? You've been you're coming down off the Mars mania, and I'm curious how you're dealing with that.
Man, I'm tired. I it took a couple weeks for it to like wear out. And like we had like whatever, you do all the landings in like February and then it was like, okay, fine. And then March was just like getting everything online and then Ingenuity started in April and doing all that. And then finally Zhurong landed. And so like it's like finally kind of over. Like
yeah,
most of
that
the
was
big
the one
Mars
you were waiting
news,
for.
Most of the Mars yeah. So starting back from like July of last year to now has been like crazy. 3 missions it's too much for me to cover in one launch cycle. So yeah, 2 is the max. Listen, space agencies listening, 2 is the max I will allow for all future launch cycles.
You're gonna have to hire some staff for future launch windows.
I'm gonna have to. Yeah, I need to grow a little more. But I have been taking time off. I have not been going pedal to the metal 50 hours a week like I did before for the last couple of weeks because I needed it. There was just days and I was like sitting in front of my computer with stuff to do. And I'm like, it's not happening. Like I got to just
not
go
feeling it.
And do something else. Cause it's not working. So it's been a little bit of burnout. So yeah, I know you've maybe been feeling some of that too lately.
Yeah. I think we were talking about that as a general like trend. I know there's some other spacey folks out there who have like, I work too hard. I need some time off for a minute. So it felt like there was a wave that it's hard to separate like, you know, pandemic burnout and that everyone's feeling now. And then, you know, space news generally has been nutty, so trying to cover stuff, it's been crazy. Yeah. And I don't know, there was one week when I was like, I don't think I can do headlines this week, so I'm just gonna bail on that. And everyone is super cool about it. That's the great part, is everyone's like, oh, we get it, we're totally cool.
As they're great.
We do this stuff, so we kind of feel like you know, we're not on the nightly news. But then sometimes you do feel like, but I do a show, like I need to do it I need to be super regular. It's always cool when people are like, no, go away. And I'm expecting that when everyone hears about your SLS stream for you to get a wave of those. Like, that was horrible.
Yeah. Well, I will take some time off, so it'll be good. But yeah, I know it's definitely been, and I think I think people like you and I are in a unique position. I mean, we're not the only ones, but people who have been covering space for like at least 4 or 5 years, because the quantity of space news has ramped up pretty significantly, especially in like the last 2 years. And so people like us who are more like, we were kind of in a habit and we were comfortable like paying a little bit of attention to everything. And that's becoming like unsustainable. Like there's just, if you want to cover launch and satellites and planetary and policy and space business, and you want to cover all the different beats, like at least pay attention to it and read all the articles, like it's becoming harder and harder to do. Like the specialization factor is like starting to weigh in. And I think I feel that pull, like to a point where I'm like, I got to pick something to drop, or I'm just like, you know what? I'm not going to even pay attention to UFOs or whatever it is. You know,
just to name one.
Some space thing. But like I'm feeling that more and more, right?
That's a good point. I was always trying to figure out if it is more news, or if like we are getting more familiar with stuff so we can dig deeper into details more comfortably. Yeah. And we were able to like realize what was and was not news. Like in a good way and a bad way, I guess. Like, I'm not going to talk about this weird announcement of a Lockheed Martin lunar rover.
I was just thinking that, too.
What's not a news thing.
And what isn't? I was like,
Yeah, that was not a news thing. And I think it can go one of two ways when you're, like, starting out trying to do this kind of thing, is that everything is news, or like, only four stories are. Like, whatever SpaceX did recently, whatever NASA announced recently, and that's it, you know? And you got to find, you got to be able to, I mean, half of sorting out, making a rundown of a show is like figuring out what doesn't go in there.
Yeah.
And that's a muscle to exercise. Like, this thing doesn't deserve my attention, nor the people listening's attention. I'm going to not talk about that.
I had that, that struggle this week with all the human landing system drama that's going on. Right. Cause there's like so much being written about it and so much being said about it. I'm trying to like parse it all. And I'm just like, I don't think there's enough this week for me to talk about it. Like but I still have to spend the time on it, right? I still have to like parse it and go.
Yeah, you have to sort out why it isn't.
Yeah.
So you do the work even if no one ever hears about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, like my Red Planet review, when I first started, it was like every week I would sit down for like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours of like reading and typing notes, and then, you know, 30 minutes you're recorded and published and good to go. Now it's like 3 hours of research. Yeah. And then I think my flow is almost all in, is almost about 4 hours now. So it's like, it's getting a little longer to do those things.
And
yeah. So it's a lot, but
it's also tricky where we have two ends of the spectrum. I think between us is that you have an interview show primarily, but occasionally it's just you doing your thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm the inverse where like, it's mostly me doing my thing and occasionally interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing I need to do a middle ground, because I do a show when I have like an interesting thought to add to the conversation. So you will never hear me do a show that's just news unless you're paying for headlines, which is literally just news. And I guess I give a lot of opinions there as well. But the main show is like analysis and opinion, which is hard to come up with. But booking guests is also impossible to do because it's so much work to do that. So I'm like, how do I nail the middle of that, where it's, because the frequency of things that I'm analyzing seems to drop as more news happens, because there's a lot of things happening, not like theoretically happening, which is more of where the analysis is. So I wonder if you have a TikTok cycle of launch windows, and I feel like I have a TikTok cycle of proposed things and then things happening.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
All right.
I don't know. This is the theory.
I haven't thought of your content that way, but I think you're kind of right on that. Yeah.
You can look at the slow periods in my main show, and there's just a lot of things happening then. And the busy periods are when there's a lot of things being talked about.
Yours is probably a lot more connected to like just the normal human annual cycle, right? Where like there's downtimes in the summer and the holidays, right? Yeah. People tend to like do during the fall and the spring, and get to work in the off periods, right?
The summer of low attention, as we're coming up on.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed inside baseball portion of Off Nominal.
I'm really glad you mentioned the interview thing though, because that is like, it's more work than it sounds like. And I sometimes make the joke that I'm like, I do interviews because then the guest just makes all the content for you, which makes it sound like it's really easy, but like, holy smokes. Especially like, so I ramped up from every 3 weeks to every 2 weeks this year once I went full time. And that difference, it like crossed a threshold where I have to think more than one episode ahead at a time. Like I can't, I used to be able to just like produce a show, find a guest, record it, produce a show. But now I'm just like, while I'm recording and producing one, I'm thinking about the ones after
the outreach.
That. And it's like, and it added a whole new dynamic to it, and it's like super interesting. So
it's an iceberg problem where people listening see the guests that did get booked but don't see all the guests that you reach out to, and like scheduling was weird, or
the ones you get ghosted by,
you didn't hear back, or like you had them on your list but you knew that reaching out to them means you have to do a lot of research into their thing and you don't have the time for that. There's all of those various things that happen that makes it impossible.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing to keep up on.
Mm-hmm. So I'm always torn too between like trying to find something that's topical. So, you know, and it's been very topical for me lately, right? Like mostly just covering all this Mars stuff. But then like sometimes I just think it's important to just like pick some random interesting topic that is in no way in the news and just do a deep dive for fun. So now that we're through all that, I hope I can do a couple more of those.
I was going to say, do you want to talk at all about your long running project that was the Patreon goal that you hit?
Yeah, I think I've mentioned it, haven't I?
I think so, but I don't know if you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, no, it's going interestingly. So I'm doing this audio documentary on the Atlas rocket because we had it as a goal for 250 patrons, which we hit with the most recent Going Pro thing, which is awesome. But this is like the most intense research I've done for a project. I've done sort of things that were like, whatever, a 40-minute episode, and you do some research, you record some interviews, and you're done. But this, like, I'm thinking this is going to end up being 2 to 3 hours, and it's like not a small thing. So, yeah. You know, I'm reading books, like I got this thing going right now for Atlas early history.
See that picture. Let me see that picture.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Atlas, the ultimate weapon. Look at that drop the shadow going on behind the block letters. It's
this is like super 1996 kind of stuff. But
that's awesome.
But then you can't just have one source, right? So you're like reading all this stuff, and another book is my pick. I'll talk about that later. But it's cool. So like you got to like learn this stuff and then like find sources for it and like fact check it, put it all together in a narrative. I want to get interviews with it as well. So like I have to kind of get my shit together first and like figure out what you want to say,
and then
find the people, reach out to them, record those interviews, and then the massive like editing job. So it's pretty significant. I kind of feel like I know what Tim Dodd goes through now when he makes his giant videos, because like this is not nothing. So I mean, I put hours and hours into this already, and I don't think I'm at halfway point yet. So
the important question I have is that, are you going to have a Dan Carlin quote voice when you're reading a
it's
quote?
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about that, like, do I need to do that? Like is that like a I kept asking myself, is that like a normal like audio documentary thing, or is that a Dan Carlin thing?
Yeah.
I think it's a Dan Carlin thing, and if I do it, I'm just gonna sound like a cheap
knockoff. Well, I don't think you should try to do Dan Carlin's quote voice, because no one can pull that off, but a different voice is helpful. It's a good affordance to your listening experience.
Yeah, there is some UX to that he does, right? So but I don't know. I think
I would love I to, try to we should, maybe quote, we should but. Get Dan Carlin to come on this podcast and talk about
that'd be amazing.
Producing historical content when you do this and you release it, we should do that.
I bet I could get him to talk about, like, because I start this Atlas thing is starting at World War II, man. I bet I could get him to talk about some of the stuff.
You
on
should
there.
Get him to yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, now I've committed to it on the air.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to do it.
Yeah. No, it's good. That would be like a total fanboy episode. Did you ever listen to he had on Tom Hanks? One of the episodes?
Yes, I did. Listen,
he was like fanboying because he had Tom Hanks on. I'm like, that would be like if Dan Carlin came on.
But also,
here.
Tom Hanks was fanboying because he was talking to Dan Carlin. Yeah. That's a good pick from both me and Jake, is that episode. I'll put that in the Dan Carlin notes. Yeah.
With his movie, right? What was the movie called?
Greyhound.
Greyhound, the ship. Yeah. Cool.
Do we want to? We're at the pick time. And
are we there already? Holy smokes.
I think
we've been talking a lot. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So I have, continuing on the rocket Atlas rocket thing. So this is the first book that I've actually finished. So this is, Bossert, America's Forgotten Rocket Science. So this guy here, Charlie Bossert, basically invented Atlas. So, this is sort of his biography, talks about a little bit his growing up in Europe and some of the, during World War II, he watched his city of Antwerp get bombed by the Germans with V2s, and you know that plays into his upbringing and stuff. And there's just like a lot of cool backstory of him coming over to America and his experience with airplanes and what he learned like from airplanes. The author like really charts this course like through his exposure in World War II, his exposure to helicopters and fixed wing, and the work he does in like aerodynamics and like how it all like becomes Atlas, and it's like super fascinating.
Wow.
So it's been pretty
this.
Good.
I gotta get
it.
It's
all over the place. But it's a good book. So I definitely recommend it. And it's a pretty easy read too. It's not that long. Big text, you know.
Does it get to the point at which him and von Braun are kind of like the faces of heavy versus light structure
rockets? Yes. Yeah.
And that they were kind of seen as like the competing. I don't think I realized like the Antwerp. It's just weird.
Well, because you think about V2, and the first thing you think about is London got all the V2s, but Antwerp got way more.
Way more.
Antwerp was the place that V2s fell. So there's like this weird dichotomy because von Braun becomes like a very well-known figure in rocketry, but they vehemently disagreed on some of these things, right? So like, because Bossert is sort of known for the very lightweight airframe. That was like what he brought from airplanes.
Balloon tanks, essentially.
Balloon tanks. So pressure fed, like Atlas would crumple under its own weight if it didn't have pressurization inside. Did, in fact.
The old SLS butterfly effect scenario happened.
Exactly, yeah.
maybe that's why you had that dream.
Maybe, man, because the crumpling rocket is in my brain, right? So, but yeah, so like you can see that kind of thing where he was like the early engineers for not for Atlas, but there was like this precursor project that they were working on at Convair as like the earliest rocket that he did, this MX-774 project. And they started it kind of Operation Paperclip had been going on. And so like the Americans were sniping all these German engineers out of Germany and bringing them to America. But they didn't have the V2s yet. All the V2 inventory hadn't made over yet. And so they were literally taking like Life magazines where there was pictures of it. And they were like measuring it on the Life magazine and trying to reverse engineer the V2.
They were doing what all SpaceX fans do.
Counting pixels on starships. Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. So they were doing that. And it's a pretty cool story. Just them looking at this. And then he's just like, this is a dumb idea. They're like two separate tanks for the fuel and the oxidizer slotted inside another fuselage. There's like double wall. Like it's so much extra weight. And the way he explains it, you're like, man, V2 sucks. What a stupid rocket.
Sounds like Starhopper.
Yeah, totally.
So wait, did they have any interaction? Because historically, everyone says von Braun was for heavy structures, Bossert was for light structures. But did they ever communicate?
They did. Yeah, they've met a few times. They don't cover a lot of that in this book. Yeah. But
I would love
they have met,
experience that. Just
Be
a fly on the wall when they were hanging out. Just because you know the history, the way it's intertwined is crazy.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this stuff too, like they were on kind of really different paths because Atlas was really, it was a weapon first, right? Like he built it to be this ICBM and it had a very short history. Like they crash course development and they were done in like whatever the first one flew in 1956-57, somewhere in there. They were ready to go and it was operational. And like 3-4 years later, it was done. They just like decommissioned it, Titan took over, and that was like the end of Atlas. And they're like, what do we do with all this inventory? And boom, space rocket, right? Mm-hmm. So seeing that path versus the army stuff with the Redstone, whatever, with von Braun, like it's all different parts of the country and it's pretty disconnected. So it's a totally different, like this is really all the space history I know about rockets seem to focus on von Braun. And like, this is, to me, this is even better story. Like this is, I love
it. I got to read that.
I'm even more excited about Atlas now than I was before.
I'm not sure why I didn't read that around the same time as I think a pick that I had on like single digits off Nominal was Taming Hydrogen. I think that was the name. Taming Liquid Hydrogen. About Centaur.
Yeah,
It was the books that you're reading, but about Centaur itself. Mm-hmm, so it had a lot of crossovers, but I feel like that would have paired nicely together.
This one's going to have more Centaur in it, this Atlas Ultimate Weapon one. And I'm not very far into this one because this is more like a technical manual. It's like got diagrams and it tells you how the rocket works. And I wanted to get the story first. So yeah, it's cool stuff, man. It's really neat. And then after this, I'm going to dig into more of the transition to the space rocket and what it actually does for the crazy amount of work that Atlas did, you know, in space, Atlas Centaur and Mercury Atlas and all that good stuff. So
Amazon Kuiper.
Yeah, Kuiper. Yeah, exactly. The last hurrah of Atlas. Yeah.
All right. I've got a happening now pick. This is one you got to jump on this train like right now. And you've got a couple of weeks to months to do it. Occasionally, astronauts go to the ISS that are a lot of fun to follow along with. And Thomas Pesquet is like incredible. His energy on the ISS is exactly. He's doing the kind of hijinks that I think we would do if we got two seats on a Soyuz and went up to hang out. Like,
okay, all right.
I'm just going to pull up two examples here, because I've got links in the show notes to his Twitter and his Flickr. You need to be following both. Because number one, he's like legitimately taking great photos of space and everything. But also you can see his hijinks as well. So just to show a little bit of this, they had a birthday party for Victor Glover on the station. And there's a saxophone and like a keyboard. And I don't know where any of these came from, but they had a full on birthday party for Victor Glover, which is excellent. So these are the kind of photos that you can experience from Thomas Pesquet. And then Twitter, his Twitter is also great. This is my favorite because Mike Hopkins, after Victor Glover and crew came back down, they got vaccinated. And Mike Hopkins tweeted this photo of them all flexing with their vaccines.
I know why you like this photo.
Also, they're just all ripped collectively.
You love Victor Glover's guns.
I mean, yeah, that's goals right there. Mike Hopkins is also loaded. But yeah. Thomas Pesquet then just tweeted back this photo of him flexing with like the two for crew two on the station. And I love that like he's got enough time to shitpost back at crew one from the station. It's excellent. He's just a great, I think actually if I go back into his Flickr here, he got the entire crew two. He's wearing like rugby jerseys on the station and he's got a rugby ball up there. I don't know, rugby ball is probably the wrong term. Look, he's got like all of crew two flexing on the station. Like he's just doing hijinks up there that are excellent. So I think you need to be following Thomas Pesquet up there. Am I saying that as with enough of a
that sounds
flair
great,
to it? Okay, cool.
Pesquet, yeah.
Yeah. He's great. You gotta get on this.
Cool. Yeah, good dude. There's gonna be some good ISS stuff coming up for
yeah.
So many people up there. Like, yeah, it's a party for sure.
Just a little extra time in the schedule and more people.
Yeah.
More personalities.
And we got Samantha Christoph Reddy now just got announced a commander for crew four, I think.
Yeah.
Expedition, whatever that is, 68 maybe. But yeah, that's gonna be really fun too. She's so awesome. Yeah, it's gonna be fun. There's like so many astronauts up there. It's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Love it.
And then there's gonna be just a bunch of randos too.
Yeah, a bunch of rando filmmakers and fashion designers and actors. All right.
Well,
that'd be interesting.
That'd be is this where we do what are you working on?
Yeah. Yeah, you go first. I got lots, so
It's as we just were discussing, it's interview season because apparently there's not a lot happening that I have thoughts on. So I was like, this is a good time to send out 1,000 interviews.
You don't want
to
weigh in with how we should take all this drama in Congress. Like, I know you're like triggered by it. So
I'm not even triggered by it. It's just like the NASA budget came out today. And before this, I mentioned to Jake that I look at it like NASA fanfic because it's like, when is the last time that has it had any bearing on NASA's budget? I don't know when, but it gets a nice news cycle out of it. Everyone talks about it. That's drama, whatever. Not doing that. So what I did was I sent a bunch of emails, and Jake never expected this in my life. DARPA emailed me back first. Like, what? You were like, what is DARPA? I don't know what DARPA
yeah.
is. Mostly because you don't know about UFOs.
DARPA goes up with UFOs in my head.
Things that you don't track.
Yeah. I'm like, they do the mind control. Like, I learned everything I know about DARPA, I learned from the X-Files. So it's mind control and
you nailed it. Yeah, that's it. That's all you need to know. DARPA, we talked to the Brock Howe, who's the manager for the Nanoracks airlock on station.
Yeah.
That was cool. I think you'll be into that one because it's a lot of operational stuff.
I did listen to it. It's good, yeah. Yeah.
I got some other ones cooking as well. So it's interview season right now. That's
cool,
what I got.
Man.
That's it.
That's good. Yeah.
That's it. Oh, I can do a, you want to see Will wearing a Rocket Lab shirt?
I absolutely do.
I can pull that up. This is we should have put this in the life update section. Here's Will wearing a Rocket Lab shirt. There he is. He's doing
his
thing.
He's so cute.
This is courtesy of one of our listeners in the Off-Nominal Discord as well. So he was loving the, it says future launch team on there.
Okay,
so
awesome.
He's definitely pulling for Rocket Lab to get back flying. So, I mean, it's likely that'll be his first rocket launch as Electron out of Virginia.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so
how old does he have to be before he'll remember that? What are you waiting for?
Well, right now I'm waiting for Electron to fly out of Virginia. Is number one what I'm waiting for. that's like, why are you waiting to take him to a Flyers game? Number one, I'm waiting for the Flyers to still be playing and also not be a pandemic. Yeah, that's really all I'm waiting on. So,
okay,
whatever. When is he going to remember? What do you remember when you're a couple years old, you know? But you have good photos of you being a year old going places.
Yeah. I think like 4 or 5 is when I started. 5 maybe when I start remembering things.
Yeah. So he's going to go to a couple before that. Just logistically, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Can't put him in daycare.
He might be there when SLS crumples. I don't know.
When it falls over on the goddamn crawlway.
What do you got going on?
I got lots going on right now. So yeah, we 100th episode of We Martians came out this week. So it was we had Andrew Jones on to talk about Zhu Rong, the Chinese rover. But I was it's funny because like I was thinking about like what I want to do for this 100th episode. Do I want to have a big like some sort of special episode? Like, do I bring on like a bunch of guests and have a party or whatever? And I was kind of like, you know what? No, like the most fun thing is just to do the work, right? Just have the same interviews and whatever. So instead of like having a special episode, I just did like a whole special event for all the listeners and stuff. So the shop is cooking right now for sales. I just wanted to like give a bunch of stuff back. So we're doing a giveaway, which I do want to offer to all the Off Nominal listeners. All you have to do is sign up for the mailing list that I have, which is low velocity, low spam. Like it's one email a month. And it's always something interesting. You sign up for that. I'm going to draw 3 winners from there to get a $25 gift card in the store. I've been putting a ton of designs in the store. Like my goal this year is like a new design of some kind every month. So there's like a whole bunch of crap going out there.
Good crap, not bad crap. Crap as in good crap.
And this is like the design that this Tharsis Planetary Park design that I have is the one that kind of came out with this event, because on Sunday, the May 30th, it's the 50th anniversary of the Mariner 9 mission, which is the first orbiter at Mars, and that's the orbiter that discovered the Tharsis mountain range. And so he made this little shirt there. You can get it on a shirt or a mug, which is a kind of fun. All sorts of cuts, men's, women's, kids, all that stuff. And then there's like an Ingenuity coffee mug we made. There's sticker packs, there's Starship shirts, there's parachute shirts from the Perseverance rover.
The parachute shirt, man, I've been wearing mine to death.
Yeah, it's a cool shirt, right? This
it's a great shirt.
This one took off. This has been my most popular design ever because the some people my theory is it got onto a Slack channel somewhere at Airborne Systems, which is the company that made that parachute, because I sold a lot of shirts to some folks who work there, which is awesome. Like it's like the most joyful thing for me to see that they like it. But there's lots of good stuff going on there. So you buy any 2 items and it's free shipping right now. Just use the code WM100. And there's just the cool stuff. So discounted stickers, discounted mission patches. I'm going all out. So it's just, I wanted to kind of give back. And then also if you're not a patron of me right now, if you join at the $5 level, you will also get a sticker pack for free, which is cool. And we got some fun stuff in there. So there's just, I just wanted to just like give.
To blowing it out.
Yeah. Just blowing it out. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and people have been, you know, taking advantage of it, which is great. And I hope to get some cool new space merch out there. And I'm discontinuing a bunch too. So there's like a whole bunch of designs on there. So the problem with one new design a month is that my SKU count's getting a little out of control. So all the old stuff that's, you know, kind of past its prime, I'm blowing out. So last chance to get it. I think June 6th is like the last day that all the stuff will be available. So
how about the one that is would live in the Off Nominal shop if it existed?
Yeah, if there was an Off Nominal shop. This was so much fun. This is more fun to make and market than it was to actually sell.
The NASA Comic Sans worm.
It's the NASA worm logo, but written in Comic Sans font. So it is like so offensive. It is like just like egregiously wrong. And people were tweeting it. And they're like, I hate this. And then they would buy 3 of them, you know? And so it was really fun to see on Twitter. It was a good one to go around. So
yeah, I'm not going to talk out of school too much, but we got one excellent, I think it was a DM on Twitter that was like, why are you doing this? The creator would really hate this.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of work that went around this last year, and they would distinctly hate this.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I felt kind of bad because at some point, like a few days after I launched this, the designer for the NASA worm, like the original guy, he passed away.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so,
yeah.
So like, I was like, oh no, I killed the guy with my Comic Sans.
No, I think like internet culture understands this.
Yeah.
Design culture understands this. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, on a different level.
It is a crossover of a bunch of weird stuff. So, but it was fun. So yeah, lots of stuff going on. So I've been putting more work into my shop than some people might realize. So I definitely encourage you to check it out. There's been some cool stuff going on there, and I appreciate all your support.
Boom.
Yeah.
Have fun with the summer of low attention.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I should also just say that just like some housekeeping, I mentioned this is the last time you'll see this room. So I am leaving Vancouver. I'm going to spend the summer with my family in Alberta because I haven't seen them since the pandemic started. You'll see a new room here. I will not be on the next episode.
Mm.
So Anthony, putting it all on your plate.
Yeah, you've done two Anthony-less episodes. One time I was on vacation in Italy, and one time I had a child.
Yeah, you had a baby. So, 1 month from now, which is when we would normally be doing this, I will be, all my crap will be in a truck somewhere and I'll be driving across the country. So, so I'm going to spend some time with my family in Alberta and then on to some new adventures, which I'll share more later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's going to take some time off so he doesn't have any more dreams of.
Yeah, a little bit of time off in there too. So. I'm pre-recording some interviews to get them all lined up so that I can just kind of chill.
Flush the memory. You need a hard reset. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Boop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. End of test. That's me doing the outro.
I loved it. It was good.
Should I leave that as the regular one?